Welcome to another episode of the Lookout Podcast. I'm in Helena, Montana, joined by Rory and Kiara, and we are talking today about Man Gulch. It is the 75th anniversary, and I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for joining me, and I'll have all you guys right. Introduce yourself real quick just to get your full names out there.
Yeah, I'm Rory Gluckert. I'm the Recreation Program Manager here on the Helena Lewis and Clark.
And I'm Kiara Gibriano, the Public Affairs Officer for the Forest.
Oh, awesome. How long have you guys worked here? I forgot to ask you before.
Okay, I've been here 8 years. Oh, yeah, and I've been with the Forest Service for 10, and yeah, so it's been a great experience.
That's awesome. How about you, Kiara?
You'll be coming up on 4 years at the end of September.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a long time for the Forest Service, the way people move around, you know, like, especially 8 years. Like, that's a long time in one place anymore, it feels like, you know?
Right. Well, I love Helena because I actually grew up here, this was like coming back home, and my wife and I and both our young sons, and we love it here, so we're not moving.
Yeah, what a great spot, man. I mean, you got water all around, you got rivers, mountains. I mean, yeah. It's kind of the best blend. I mean, it kind of makes sense to be the capital because it's a great place to be, you know?
That's what we think.
Yeah. And then what brought you here, just the job, or?
Yeah, I had done a trail crew in Glacier and was just so drawn to the mountains out here. Took the first opportunity I had to come back.
Oh, nice. Yeah, not too far from Glacier from here, especially the crow flies, you know. Go up through Browning, I guess, probably the quickest route to Glacier from here, huh?
Yep, East Glacier. Mm-hmm. Right through there, through Browning.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, my family place is up there on the Missouri, you know, like right where the Dearborn comes into Missouri.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, the family cabin. That, like my great-grandpa who actually bought this, built the place up there, and we still have it in the family.
Okay.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of where like this thing would go is through East Glacier, is you know that route. So when he first got it, I mean, it was a little nicer looking back then. So trying to bring it back to its glory.
I mean, it looks great.
Thanks.
You can see this thing a mile away. It's shiny.
That's the great thing about it. Yeah, you know, like so, you kind of see it coming, and I think it draws a little attention. And then the logo, you know, a guy in Missoula drew it up. I tried to do it myself, and it looked worse than like a third grader. Like it was so bad. I have no artistic talent.
Stick figures.
Yeah, that's how it was. The parachute did not look like it, and the tower was not like a tower. It was a bad deal. But have you guys been out to Man Gulch before then?
Yes, I think both Rory and I were out there on May 22nd, assisting with the restoration of the memorials.
Oh, wow.
And we'll have another group going in next week to help paint and seal all of the memorials out there.
Yeah, I mean, they've been there for a long time.
Right, and several were in need of replacement, so those have been, you know, donated in kind by Matt Wetzel's concrete company out of Missoula.
Oh, thank you, Matt. That's great.
Yeah. And then Backcountry Horsemen volunteers helped carry them all out and, you know, weighed all the cement memorials and water cement to bring it.
Yeah, they brought them in on mules and they got them all packed up and, It was just really neat to see the memorials on those mules and then all of the provisions, you know, the concrete, the water. They used lumber bunks to get everything loaded up. And it was really neat to see that. By the time Kiara and I got out of the truck, I mean, they were already up at the ridge line.
Really?
They were like, see you guys.
Yeah, we got it.
We hiked in and helped with another crew that came up from the riverside, the Missouri riverside, and then hiked everything in from the ridgeline down into the gulch. I actually hadn't been into the Man Gulch to the memorials from there, and so my first time in Kiara's as well was hauling in some of that equipment and the memorials themselves.
Okay.
It was pretty a powerful experience.
Yeah, you can feel like there's an energy in there for sure, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'll tell more of this story towards the end of our podcast if we have time, but like my first time I was really young when I was in there. I mean, it was early 90s, and even as a kid, like we don't really have a good grasp of things like that, like life and death and things, but man, you could feel like I could feel something bad had happened there, you know, even as a young feller, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was interesting when we were standing there, the wind was like really picking up through the dry grasses, and there was this storm that almost kind of broke around us. Like you could see these dark storm clouds building and it seemed like it just passed right around where we were working. But it did kind of create that energy and feel.
Yeah, you kind of feel like how how that gulch can kind of like suck the wind right up into it, right?
It really did, and like throughout the whole day it just looked like you know, you were going to get hit with something big. And there was a lot of potential of wind and rain behind that. And it just kind of all cleared around us. And it gave us this extra time to work. And I remember sitting there, we were at lunch, and everyone just kind of looked at each other. And we all knew that we weren't leaving until every one of those memorials was in the ground and secured and properly put in.
Oh man, I know, like, I appreciate it. I know everyone appreciates that work. Like, that's awesome. It's such a big event, you know. Like, I'm part of a book club called the Lookout Book Club, I think. Okay. It's called. Man, I hope I'm not messing that up. But the Idaho Fire Lookouts, and kind of they do most of it. I just kind of tag along.
Yeah.
But mostly Lookout books, but we decided to do the Young Men in Fire book. And so, you know, we're just talking about, you know, that fire and in the beginning, have you guys read Young Men on Fire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, in the beginning, and I read it twice. Well, I'm in my second time now, so mm-hmm. I read it before as a smoke jumper, because it was, like, I was trying to, like, take in anything that a smoke jumper to try to, like, get an edge on training or whatever it might be to help myself along. And so I read that before I went to jump training, and so it's weird to read it again, and, you know, all the praise and stuff he gives to smoke jumpers, like, it was a little uncomfortable reading it for me. I'm like, man, he really likes smoke jumpers in the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
But he talks about the special area, like, even the, like, geology of the area, and how, which I didn't even know, and I didn't pick it up the first time I read it, but how the gates of the mountains going into it, there is remnants of an arch that used to go from cliff to cliff. So under that, you know, you go under an arch in that corridor if you're heading towards, you know, Man Gulch Memorial or upriver, like, or downriver? Yeah, downriver, like, I guess.
Downriver.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Like, I had no idea. And then he goes on to some of the other, like, cool features about the area and like, how it's just a special place in general. And then, you know, this big tragedy happens there, you know. I guess we should probably go into that, I guess, on the tragedy. Who wants to feel that one, I guess?
Yeah, well, I will say about the arches, too. So,
oh, yeah, you know what to say.
So the arches, if you take that the boat ride there from the gates of the mountains where the boat docks are at, just next time you're out there, and this for other folks too, is just go and try to find them all. There's a bunch of arches throughout.
Oh, really?
That whole river corridor.
I didn't even know.
Just in some really neat geological things, and it's pretty awesome to see. So just if you're in there again, I'm just saying, those arches are pretty neat.
Yeah, well, you know, like, I think every time I've been in there, it's been not, like, a real critical eye. It's more, like, for recreation, swimming.
Right.
And I don't know why. Like, last time we were just trying to get through the Man Gulch, or the Gates of the Mountains to that boat dock where the tour starts, because my uncle's on the other side. He's got, like, at the Oxbow area where there used to be, like, a restaurant and stuff. My uncle's
all right there.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, kind of, is it Log Gulch? Is that the put-in? Do you guys know?
Log Gulch on the upper.
Yeah, on the upper
Holter side.
Yeah,
so
it's the last boat launch, I think, right, on that road. Yeah, so you put in at Log Gulch and then head past Split Rock, and my uncle's place is down that way.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so
yeah, they had that old burger joint there, and
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's
what you could only boat into it.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a neat place, and I don't know if it still exists anymore.
It's not. I believe that's a private residence now.
Oh, man, what a nice place to have.
Yeah, right.
Professional kitchen there, probably, I imagine, too. Oh, man, is my mic kind of sound like I'm echoing a little bit? Like, I don't
know.
It sounds like I'm distant. Is it better than my mic right here?
You sound good.
Yeah,
you sound good.
It's
very clear in mine. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you guys sound great, too, so I thought maybe I was bringing the podcast down.
Kiara, are you going to field this next one?
Yeah, it's up to you.
It's kind of...
Just kind of tell a brief version of the story.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy. You know, folks can read Young Men in Fire if they want, like, more of the details, because, yeah, as you guys know, Norman McLean really goes deep into it.
Yeah. So you know, we're hoping to keep the story of the men alive through this event. We do have a number of family members who are going to be in town for the actual events.
Oh, wow.
And, Norman McLean does go into great detail about kind of the individual stories of the men, but they were all very young, you know, several students from University of Montana, you know, all beginning out their lives. Some had come back from wars. But it seemed like a routine jump on August 5th when they got the call at 12:30. And, you know, there was a fire guard who had served as a smoke jumper before who was out kind of scouting the fire. And when the plane came, it was super hot and, you know, it made the air very turbulent. And so the plane had to drop the men higher than usual, and it scattered all of their equipment, breaking their radio and you know, took them over an hour to just collect their belongings again when they landed, but they gave the all clear sign, plane left, and, you know, they went out to find James Harrison, the fire guard, and, you know, kind of create a plan. On their hike down to the river, they realized their path had been cut off by a spot fire. And that spot fire, you know, at first didn't seem like anything super threatening. They were still holding their tools when they turned around, and they were kind of taking a very mild grade away from that fire. And soon it became apparent that that, you know, fire had gotten into the grass and was moving very fast. And there was a point where they just dropped all their tools in a pile, and then it became a race for their lives. And, you know, they were on a super steep slope, very hot, and this fire is just turns into, you know, if it's described as a blow-up, and would create investments in fire laboratories down the road to try to understand how this blow-up had occurred. But chase them up the gulch. Many of the men died of burn injuries immediately following the fire. Two made it through this rocky cliff at the top to safety. And one, the Wag Dodge, was able to kind of in the moment start a defense. I forget what it's called.
Like a backfire.
It kind of, it has another term when it's like for lying down in.
Oh, really?
Black.
Right, he basically was able to light a gopher match and burn out a clearing for himself and just lie there. And he describes feeling like he was picked up three times by the wind. But he did ultimately survive and, you know, had tried to get the other men to come with him and lie in that. But in the chaos of that moment, no one could hear or understand him and, you know, just kept going. So,
yeah, they couldn't, the men, so he was the foreman of the crew, and so the men were looking at him like, what are you doing? You're lighting a fire around yourself. That was unheard of at that time.
Yeah.
And so they didn't follow him, and actually in the Cold Missouri Waters, the song that was written about Man Gulch, they talk about that in the song, and how the men wouldn't follow Wag Dodge, and so, yeah, they were looking at him like, what's going on? What are you doing?
Yeah,
we had an idea. Yeah.
Well, yeah, what a crazy heads up, cool play in his mind, like cool headed, you know, like
it's incredible to kind of come up and have the presence to just be able to, you know, striking those gopher matches. I hear can be really hard, especially if it's windy at all. Or
that's what I was thinking, because it sounds like that wind was almost like hurricane force kind of coming at them. And then what was it like? I originally thought it was 50-foot flame lengths, but then reading last night or the other night, I thought it said 200-foot flame lengths. So it's like, could you imagine a wall of fire and then having the coolness to be like, oh, I'm just going to light this real quick and lay down? And
right, recognizing he didn't think his men would make it to the top, and that was like his presence of mind to just stop and kind of innovate that on the spot, because none of the men had seen that in their training or were familiar with what he was doing.
Yeah.
It's likely he had never had that experience either. It just was kind of this presence of mind to do it, and it saved his life.
Totally. It's almost like he did like a quick calculation, like, hey, you know, we're not gonna be able to run this thing, and this is the last ditch effort, and, you know, went to that, and because that's what it would have to be, right? It's like death, maybe not death, you know, and go with the maybe not death, as in lighting the fire and laying down. And I didn't know, would you say he got picked up three times?
That's what he describes. He was like pulled off the ground just because of the winds passing through.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, like with a fire, and you know, he talks about it in the book a little bit, Norm MacLean, Young Men in Fire, about, you know, how a big fire will create its own weather. You know, a lot of times it'll like suck air into it, you know. So, I mean, he could have been getting air from two different directions, you know.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, I mean, so even the fire investigator who would come 2 months later to like try to understand the blow up, he had a known heart condition, but he really wanted to test his theories. And he ended up having a heart attack on the same slope as the men. Whoa. And so he's often considered the 14th casualty of the Man Gulch fire. And his death ultimately was what led to, you know, all of his colleagues petitioning to have a dedicated fire lab to try to understand fire behavior and keep future firefighters safe, and also just have an understanding of how the phenomenon of a blow-up occurs.
Yeah.
And so now there's a dedicated fire lab right next to the smoke jumper base in Missoula.
Yeah, and that's it's pretty wild. And you know, they're doing great work, and you know, with the shelters and trying to invent better ways and just, you know, better ways to fight fire and better ways to protect firefighters. And you know, like when I was at the jump base there in Missoula, a few of the fire lab folks, we'd have like a big like compound barbecue or big, you know, AFD aerial fire depot barbecue. We'd invite everybody over, so the fire lab folks come over and like be like, so what do you think, like one of their ideas, and I don't know whatever happened to it, but it was like, what do you think if like one person carries like a giant shelter and then everybody kind of comes to it to kind of like, you know, have a bigger space of air, I think, to, you know, try to survive in. I was like, how long is it going to take to put together? You know, so I never, you know, never followed up to see exactly what they had going on with that. But it sounded like it was just going to be a little tough because it was going to take one person really out of the fight, because they'd be carrying so much. And then they'd have to kind of orbit around the crew and make sure everyone was like close enough to get in the shelter. So I think they might have scrapped it in the end because of those issues. But you know, like they're always constantly working on stuff to make it, you know, a better place for the fire folks out there, and which it's been great to have.
Right, and helps us with our current management strategies today to be successful and efficient with addressing wildfires.
Yeah.
They're very innovative. I was out there for a tour, I want to say about 6 months ago, and all their work with drones that they're doing and being able to drop off supplies and get things to spike camps. It was really neat to see the accuracy that they had on those.
Oh, yeah.
And it was cool. I was out there about 6 months ago for a tour, and just blown away.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I don't know, I haven't actually like been out there in a while, but you can kind of tour everything out there, right? There's the NTDP, which is like the R&D department, kind of the Forest Service, and then fire lab and the jumpers, and so it's a really cool spot of like all this like wildland fire, you know, coming together, and just good minds, I guess, coming together to help you know, fight the same fire, I guess, you know. The same reasons? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm trying
to move in the
eloquent.
Same direction.
Yeah, I'm moving the same direction. I'm trying to be eloquent with my words here, but I'm not that kind of guy, so it's not working.
It's all good.
But yeah, so I kind of cut you off, I guess. So like Wag Dodge lights the fire, and then.
Yeah, so I mean, right after it's I think around, it's sometime in the evening, but it's summer, so it's probably still somewhat light. You know, they return down to the Missouri River to try to find help, and end up, they're able to eventually flag down a boat and travel to the kind of ranger district office. And they walk in, and the lead ranger of the district at the time has been really focused on the York Fire, which is another fire that had broken out in the same time period.
Oh.
And this is, you know, back in the day where people are just pulled off bar stools to help fight the fire. And so he's trying to manage all of these volunteer recruits to manage the York Fire, and then realizes, you know, there's been a huge incident, and they're not sure, you know, they just know that there's almost a dozen people missing, and, you know, they don't have any like real understanding of quite what's happened yet and how severe it is. But, you know, the ranger orders stretchers and a rescue crew to come, you know, basically do a recovery of whoever is out there and bring them to medical help. And it's, you know, it's just a kind of a chaotic time of trying to assemble all of the resources they'll need. You know, stretchers get left behind, and then they have to send a boat back to get them, and they're missing blankets and all these pieces. And I can't even imagine how much stress everyone's under to try to rally at a time where there's fires all over the place, and, you know, the unthinkable has just occurred. You know, smoke jumpers before this point had never faced a fatality. They were kind of always seen as these invincible people who would just always somehow avoid harm.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't even like a consideration that kind of a thing could happen.
Yeah, that's where, like, Norman McLean in the book kind of described it as, like you said, like, they were kind of seen by everybody and themselves as invincible. And right. So, like, at first, it was, you know, sounded like that ranger was just like, what? You know, like, almost didn't believe it. Like,
right, just had assumed, you know, the ranger was right there when the fire blew up. He had actually, like, you know, describes coming up by boat to kind of check, and he thinks he can hear men working. But then after the blow-up occurs, he kind of just assumes they have... they're somewhere else, they've made it to safety, there must be on the other side of the ridgeline.
Yeah.
And doesn't really seem to have much concern. No one's able to reach him on the radio because, of course, their radio's dead, and
Yes.
It's kind of presumed that they're doing just fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, these rescue crews are coming. You know, they're able to transport two of the survivors to medical help, but both of them, you know, are burned so severely they pass away by the next day.
Oh, geez. So, yeah, like coming off the hill, I guess, so there was the two that were able to outrun it. Mm-hmm. Was it Rumsey and Sally? Is that the last name?
Yes. Yeah.
And then Wag Dodge, who, you know, lit the fire. Man, I wish I knew the name of that fire. I'll be on my way home, or else we'll Google it after this. And I'll be like, oh.
Something like defense fire or something that, where you just burn it to protect yourself.
Yeah. But it makes sense there's a name for it, you know, and everyone just, you know, like how it goes. Like people just call it like something. It just, you know, like backfire or whatever, and just kind of lives that way. But so those three, and, well, pretty much healthy, you know, like maybe like Wag had that injury from the jump, but I think he's pretty much healthy, right? And then same with Rumsey and Sally, but those other two, like you said, are so badly burned that they don't survive, and everyone else is just dead on the hillside, right?
Yeah, so they're slowly, you know, finding people, and, you know, the ranger leaves notes under each, you know, basically with any identifiable things he can find to try to identify who they are, and that's where those monuments are today, is where the bodies were recovered from.
What a horrible job that guy had. Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, the ranger story really does stick with me, too, because of just how, you know, I think there's such a ripple effect when there's these tragedies, and we don't often think of, you know, how much of an impact it leaves on those who survive it, too. Yeah. And, you know, this ranger's suffered, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite significantly going through that.
There is a manuscript, too, from the ranger's wife, right?
Oh.
And it goes into great detail on some of the things that she was feeling, too, after the event.
Oh.
And things that happened. There was a lot of guilt, you know, by Wag Dodge. And so there was these residual effects that just transpired. And it wasn't just the fire. It worked its way out.
Yeah, because there was the one accusation that his fire might have been the reason why, you know, the rest of the jumpers didn't make it, right? And which wouldn't, you know, there's no way. I mean, like, that flame from up front was racing up the hill, you know, like, I think it maybe just joined in with the regular flame front is all, you know. I don't think it caused any problems with the rest of the crew. I think they were already, like, in a bad way, but, and then, I mean, so I've been on fires where it just kind of like nuked when it burns super hot, which I'm guessing that did too, which is how it's described. And everything, you know, it's just nothing's alive, like no vegetation, everything's just black. And it's a weird, eerie place to be when you're in like a canyon like that, when it is just nuked out, burned that hot, you know, and then actually have some bodies, you know, in there. I mean, that had to be just a eerie, like, I mean, I couldn't even imagine, like, I don't really have the words to describe how bad that had to look and to be on that scene. And especially like when, at the time, everyone thought, you know, the elite firefighters that, you know, can't, you know, are invincible, you know, or they're dead on the hillside. I mean, I couldn't even imagine walking up on that. It's what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, to be on that rescue or recovery team, I think it was probably unimaginable when you got up there and actually started having to do the job.
Yeah.
When I went into Mangults just about a month ago, I tried to close my eyes and think about all of that, and it was hard to.
Yeah, right. Oh, it is, man. You can kind of see how it could happen, and especially like if you know the story well, and how, you know, Norm MacLean. So folks who maybe haven't read the book Young Men in Fire, Norm MacLean has a map and shows kind of how things transpired and where the bodies were in you know, a canyon, and how the canyon is there, the gulches, I guess, laid out. So it kind of helps like picture it. So when you go there, boots on the ground, mm-hmm. like holy cow. Yeah, and then I don't know when they did. I mean, they did a really meticulous job, because even in the book, he talks about how it was like around 5 o'clock, I think, when they finally left the jump spot. And then just before, like, was it four minutes to six is when they finally left.
5:56 is when the watch is stopped on Harrison's wrist.
Yeah. Like, man, I mean, that's a really good investigation of, like, you know, down to the, you know, finding the watch and recording that. I mean, because me, I wouldn't even think of it. I'd just be like trying to help. And then once I realized that no one was savable at that point, then I'd just be like, oh, man, the families. You know, I wouldn't be thinking about the research part of it. So it's a good thing someone had their head on their shoulders for that, you know?
And we've used some of these big events like the watches that stopped at 5:56, and we've tried to incorporate them into remembering these smoke jumpers for the 75th anniversary. So we are going to have a moment of silence at 5:56.
Oh, awesome, man.
During the event at the Capitol building.
Man, you guys are doing a great job. I appreciate everything you guys are doing. We talked about it a little bit before, but I mean, even like if you guys want like talk about the poster a little bit too, like
this poster was well put together by an artist named David Goodson. He printed 350 copies for us. We're going to be selling these, or not we, our partner, the Discovery Foundation, is going to be selling these out of the Forest Service office here in Helena. But our whole planning committee, Smoke Jumpers, the National Smoke Jumper Association, a bunch of different partners helped us put together this art and just kind of the vision for it. Up top, you have Miss Montana, which was actually the plane that dropped the jumpers off. That's the plane, and then the smoke jumpers, and then the poppies on the bottom are for the veterans. So that is, it's pretty cool to incorporate that because a lot of those guys were veterans.
Ten of them.
There you go. And then we have the shovel and the Pulaski, and we worked really, really hard at trying to make this we're looking like you're in Man Gulch, and so I think it turned out really well. That this poster is actually banners as you come into the walking mall downtown. We were able to get those installed there. They're going to be up for a couple months, so go check that out if you're in Helena.
Yeah. And it's, to me, it seems like it speaks to the period, right? 1949, and this seems like a poster you'd see kind of back then, you know, which I really like, too. And for folks who don't know, that Miss Montana is still around, still doing flights around
Missoula. It's the state plane of Montana, too. So it was designated the state plane, I think, either last year or the year before. And yes, still, it went to Normandy recently for a World War II anniversary. I feel like they recently, you know, it was a plane that served many purposes.
Yeah.
And the Miss Montana, the plane, actually came out for the 70th anniversary 5 years ago. I helped lead that event.
Oh, really?
And so I was able to see Miss Montana in action, and it's really neat. It's like having this big thing flying in the sky.
Yeah, because it's all aluminum, right?
It's all
like polished out, chromed out. Yeah, like this, right? Yeah.
And really neat to see that plane. I'm so excited to have the plane here.
That's so cool. Yeah, it's supposed to do a flower, right?
Museum of Mountain Flying, you know, manages the plane and keeps it in great condition. And yes, they're working on logistics for bringing the plane over, and we are hoping for a flyover of the Capitol if FAA clearance happens and weather permits.
Yeah.
It is, you know, a plane that needs optimal flying conditions. Yeah. Can't fly in extreme smoke or hail or rain.
Yeah, no instruments really, right? Just the old-fashioned ones, like no electronics, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, right?
It's the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, totally.
During the 70th anniversary memorial tribute, we had Miss Montana fly over Man Gulch and drop some wreaths. And we hope to have another at least flyover, and then as well as the Capitol. But we're fingers crossed. We're hoping for the best. Positive thinking, good weather. That's all of those things are going to align, hopefully, to make a good outcome.
Yeah, I hope so too. And usually events like this, it seems like, you know, no matter what happens, it's going to be a great event. But you know, usually seems like things kind of line up to work out. Even if things kind of like a little rocky going into it, it seems like things seem to smooth out once the gears start turning, you know, on big events. Yeah.
And we've been in Museum Mountain Flying's been on our planning committee for over a year now, and so we've been communicating with them quite frequently, and it's been a great partnership.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I'm going to reach out and bug them a little bit too, because I'd like to come check out the plane and maybe just like do a little podcast about it and the upkeep. And because I got to jump out of DC-3, my first fire jump as a smoke jumper out of Missoula was out of a DC-3, and I thought it was this one. But, you know, back in the day, they had quite a few of them at different jump bases, and the one I jumped out of was different, and it had, like, the turboprop conversion and stuff, and I think this one's all original, if I'm remembering correct, last time I saw it. It's been a while, but I mean, I still got to jump out of a DC-3, which is cool, but it wasn't the DC-3, the C-47 or whatever the flight. Is it C-47?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's all been rebuilt. I want to say they started on that project like 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
But it's really neat. If you get a chance to come over here in Helena, stop by.
Yeah.
They're going to be right behind us at the airport.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure I could maybe...
Just park here again.
Yeah, that's
You'd
true.
Be in the perfect spot.
Just like, hey, come talk to me.
Come talk to me. Yeah. Put a big sign up.
Yeah, totally. Cause, yeah, I'd love to pick the brain out a little bit, you know, like, there's the romantic side of, like, you know, aviation and stuff, you know, and that is kind of, to me, embodies it quite a bit, with especially when it's all polished up and everything.
Yeah, and the DC-3 Miss Montana is also featured on a, you know, we have a local artist in town who's doing a tribute for the Mangalt 75th and, you know, has one panel of this tunnel is going to feature the DC-3 and Smoke Jumpers and be in tribute to the Mangalt.
Man.
Smoke Jumpers, and then kind of through the tunnel is the whole fire cycle. You know, just showing that fire is part of this landscape here in central Montana and just kind of the natural cycle that students learn about in their class.
On
the other panel, as you're looking through the tunnel, you can actually see right into Gates of the Mountains.
Oh.
And so that's going to be kind of a tribute to the flora and fauna that call that area home and make that area so special to so many people.
Wow, that is awesome.
And that was another project that we had a lot of input in and working with the artist. And, you know, it was a competitive process through the city to get the grant and I guess to be allowed to do it. And we're just glad the city made the right decision.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Helena.
I just want to also recognize how many people are involved in this. Like, you know, it's so wonderful. We have like musicians involved, even from the research station, James Keelahan, the original songwriter of Cold Missouri Waters, John McLean, who's the son of Norman McLean's Young Men in Fire, who also became a prolific fire writer.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I would say over 50 volunteers between National Smoke Jumper Association, Wild Montana, Forest Fire Lookout Association, Montana Discovery Foundation, and their board members. Just, you know, DNRC, so many different entities and volunteers engaged, and it's just really encouraging to see that level of interest and willingness to just go above and beyond to make connections for this team, to like look for opportunities. You know, we have someone working on an oral history project and helping with an exploration works exhibit at our local science museum to feature fire ecology and smoke jumping as a way to manage fires. So I just, you know, it's just a huge network at this point. And so it's just such a kind of interesting, you know, Rory and I rarely get the opportunity to be involved in something that's this interconnected. And it's been such a positive experience to see that level of interest. It's
so amazing.
It really is just like collaboration, how it should be.
Yeah.
And just to work with all of these folks and coming together, I'm just amazed that everyone just... they've stepped up in a big way.
Yeah.
Because Kara and myself, I mean, we're small pieces in this. This is a huge community of us all moving in the same direction. And it's been really neat to be a part of. I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, I think you guys kind of mentioned, I can't remember if it was at the beginning of the podcast or before the podcast, but we were talking about like it, you know, it's good because it's not, you know, these young men aren't being forgotten, and especially how young they were, like you were saying. I think I was reading the book. It was, like Dietert or something.
Yeah, pulled from his birthday dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At 19.
Yeah, like how sad, you know, and Norman had mentioned that in his book that, you know, a lot of these young fellows hadn't had a chance to even live life, you know, at this point and, you know, tragically lost their lives. So it's great that their memories aren't being lost and their families get to come out. And then, like I said, on their own grave markers at their own cemeteries, right? They're getting the medallion.
That's right. So National Smoke Jumper Association has done this incredible project where across 7 different states, they're installing these medallions that connect the smoke jumpers back to, you know, that history at fighting the Man Gulch fire, because I think folks were noticing that there was just no connection when they were finding these memorials across the country. There is nothing tying them back to this event.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, you know, people in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New York, and you know, we wanted to share. Mike Bina, the president of the National Smoke Jumper Association, now really saw that this is more than a Montana event, because that's how it started. It's like, you know, kind of a Montana audience in mind. But, you know, Mike really was the driver of making it a national event and helping us recognize the significance to the country, not just to Montana's history.
Yeah, that's a good call. And until I talked to you on the phone, I was thinking more like small, you know, like Montana, like roots. And then, but then you started kind of talking about all the different markers, because I was talking about the fellow in Derby. I'm trying to remember his name. It started with an S, I think. It's a fellow from Derby who died in the fire. But do you know?
Sylvia is in Massachusetts.
We'll get back to you. Yeah, we can figure it out. Yeah, and I can put it in the comments. But, like, you know, and so I was just thinking about, like, just, you know, just in my backyard, you know, with that memorial and trying to track down, like, folks, because I know they're, you know, in the little town Derby was talking about maybe having a smoke jumper come down. So that's kind of, like, how it started going. And then I got a hold of, was it Mike at the National Smoke Jumper Association?
Yeah, Mike Pina.
Yeah, Mike Pina. And started talking to him. Then I got your number and called you. And then that's when you said, like, yeah, Pennsylvania. And I was like, and I knew that, like, because I read the book before, but I didn't, like, put it together. I was like, yeah, that's right. I mean, like, all these families who lost their loved ones, you know, all over the country, you know, this is a big event. And like you said, I mean, if you go to a grave marker in Pennsylvania, you know, for your great uncle or whoever, however you connect to that person, and there's just a grave marker, it doesn't really do it justice to what happened, the tragedy, you know, like, and how they lost their life.
Yeah, I mean, even my brother is a history teacher in Massachusetts and is helping with Joseph Sylvia's memorial in Plymouth, and has his whole class engaged with the story, learning about smoke jumpers, even learning about, you know, their role of jumping out of planes kind of in World War II and how it's all interconnected.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just been interesting to see how, you know, we're connecting this next generation in ways we did not anticipate when we started this. Yeah. And there's been so many students helping, you know, we had the C.R. Anderson Middle School students. You want to share that, Rory?
Yeah, we had the C.R. Anderson Middle School students. We didn't even know this, but they had a Man Gulch Club.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so come to find out, they wanted to put together an application for designated a national recreation trail.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, yeah, the whole planning committee goes, yeah, we can get behind that for sure.
Yeah.
And so they worked really, really hard, went up there a couple times, took notes, put together a detailed proposal. And this, of course, needs to be, this goes all the way up through the Washington office to get approval. And, you know, we got to change our mapping and to recognize it as a national recreation trail. But we helped them out, and they were able to do it. And they gave a presentation at the library, and Kiara and some other folks actually went in and gave them a plaque, and they didn't know it, but it had already been designated. And so they got the surprise when they were making their presentation,
so cool,
that, hey, this trail's been designated, and thank you for your service. We are having them out. They're going to be our VIPs at the event.
Very cool.
Yeah, we've really tried to engage youth and you know, with the message too, that, hey, get it excited about natural resources
and the outdoors,
conservation, because we need you.
Yeah,
we need you.
Yeah, it's next generation. You know,
right.
Like we're in weird terms, we're kind of on our way out a little bit more. You know, like I'm tickling 20 years in the agency, and and even, you know, even if you're new, you're still like only have so much time you can do. So if you can pass the torch off to these younger folks and at least get them thinking about it, you know, and interested about it, like you said. And when I started this, it was right during the COVID stuff and just the technology era. Like, you know, like one of my friends had said he noticed that, like, a lot of the parks around everywhere, you know, they're kind of empty, you know, because everyone's, you know, got their game or whatever, you know. So, like, trying to get more folks introduced in the outdoors. And I have a friend in Bozeman who's doing it in his part too, and through just like bicycling and whatever you can do to try to get more youth in the outdoors. So that's huge.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. It really worked in together with some of the stuff that we're doing as far as recreation, where we have this national trails 10-year challenge, and we did get some funding for this national recreation trail. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
it all worked out really, really well.
Oh, it's so cool.
So yeah, we're very excited about that.
And that money is, I was going to say, the money, the, you know, that designation brought in is enabling us to do a partnership with University of Montana students, who also have a club kind of dedicated to, I think it's called their Fire Club.
Oh, yeah.
They, you know, helped research all the backgrounds of each of the smoke jumpers and the fire guard who died. And, you know, we're working on a signage project that would either go on the Mangalt Overlook Trail, but also potentially the M Trail, kind of off the university campus, because five of the students were UM students.
Oh, yeah.
And so they wanted to, you know, also engage with the story. So all of that's getting funded, you know, through this.
That effort. And that was just a few weeks ago.
Yes, it's all kind of developing life. You know, we had the East Helena students work on these a nameplate for one of the men. You know, the nameplate was missing on one of the memorials, and they had their middle class, you know, create nameplates. So it's just, it's been really awesome to just see the next generation engaging. And then we have a education coordinator, Liz Burke, in the office, who, you know, has been training teachers on fireworks curricula.
Oh, wow.
So that they can introduce students to, you know, just basic fire science in classrooms and just kind of like spark that interest, no pun intended.
That was one of our goals right out of the gate. And I think we're getting there. We also have at Exploration Works, right before you get to the mural, we're going to have a whole exhibit where you can, you know, touch and feel everything smoke jumping, and just to get kids excited. It might be the one that I'm most excited about because I have two young sons who are going to be all over that.
Yeah.
And I'm there a lot, Exploration Works. So, we're working with a bunch of different folks to make that happen. And, shout out to Exploration Works for being so awesome.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah. That's great. Oh, man, yeah, getting the next generation involved. Because, you know, like, as you were talking about it, like, I think we probably talked about fire stuff being in, you know, from Whitehall, but I don't think we went into any of the fire science stuff. Maybe no one was really talking about it back then. I mean, that was, like, 98 and, you know, early 2000s, so maybe it wasn't as much of a topic, you know, especially with what they know, what I guess we know now with fire science and especially, like you guys were talking about the tunnel earlier about, like, the benefit of good fire and how, you know, it's part of the ecosystem and stuff. And I don't think that was really much of a thought, or at least it wasn't really talked about too much back then. So I think now that we know about these things, or like we remember, because it seemed like, you know, Native Americans been doing it forever. So that we're bringing that back around. It's, you know, it's good to start them at that younger age to teach them, like, yeah, not all fire is bad, you know, like good fire prevents the bad fires, you know, so.
Right, it's far more nuanced than the smoky bear message makes it seem. And yeah, I mean, now we're understanding that if you can manage landscapes well and use prescribed fire effectively, like, you're actually helping the land and ultimately, you know, helping protect the firefighters and not creating very dangerous situations.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one thing I'm looking forward to, is we have a walking mall event August 4th, and we'll have BLM is going to bring up this fire table where it has, I think it's like 1,000 matchsticks or something, and it demonstrates how defensible space works. You can actually see, you know, it's a live fire table, and you can see how fire moves through different fuel types. And so that will be set up, and then we'll have DNRC and Tri-County Fire talking about what programs are available to homeowners to ultimately create defensible space and hopefully put fewer firefighters at risk.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Man, so yeah, so August 4th, the Walking Mall, August 5th, the big event at the Capitol. I'll let you take this. I don't want to mess this up.
I'm going to start with the 3rd.
Yeah, let's just go.
The 3rd.
Let's just go through it. Yeah, yeah. It's the 3rd through the 5th for the public events, and then on the 6th, we're having a private event just for family members. I'll get into that one. Yeah. That's a special one for all of us.
Yeah.
So the 3rd, we have at the Myrna Loy, why am I forgetting the name of the...
Higgins Ridge.
Higgins Ridge fire was a similar fire, kind of like the same type of blow-up fire that happened. That's going to be filmed. They're going to show that film there at the Myrna Loy. And then followed by that, there's going to be a panel discussion about some of the possible residual effects of that fire that we saw in Man Gulch. And it'll be there's a whole star-studded panel that will be on there.
Including a survivor of the fire who lives in Helena. He's a smoke jumper who survived the 1961 fire. And all of, you know, if you watch the PBS documentary, it does a lot of the men are making ties back to Mann Gulch and what lessons learned. They were fortunate to have a positive outcome.
Yeah.
And his name's Dale Graff. He's actually a resident here in Helena, and he'll be there. And so he's done a couple other talks here on the one up in Great Falls, and I believe one in town too. But so he's a good one to come check out.
Oh, so you'll have to pick his brain, because I'd love to have him on and talk about it. Because
he would definitely do it.
That'd be great. Because I didn't even know about the Higgins Ridge until like a year ago. And then I was like, holy cow.
And that helicopter pilot, I mean,
yeah, gosh, that was wild. I mean, they were very lucky. I mean, even the helicopter pilot used to be a smoke jumper, so thinking about them.
He wasn't going to give up, that's for sure. And I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but
it's a good teaser, though, man.
Just come to that event, too. We're going to have two showings, actually. We're going to have one for the public and then one for family members, and it's going to be a packed, so...
Oh, cool.
And then on the 4th, we're going to be in the Waukee Mall, Kiara described, about having the fire table and a bunch of our partners out there in the Waukee Mall. We're going to have some music. And then it's going to be right around the 10 Mile Creek Brewery.
Oh.
And they're kicking off a beer launch.
Oh, yeah.
They'll have a beer launch dedicated to the smoke jumpers and the men there in Mann Gulch. And I believe it's called Cold Missouri Waters.
Oh, very cool. Very fitting.
Something, Cold Missouri Pilsner or something like that.
Yeah.
And then 5th, we'll have the event at the Capitol. And at 5:56, we're going to have a moment of silence. And hopefully we can get the weather to cooperate and the smoke to cooperate with us, that we can get Miss Montana to do a flyover.
Yeah.
And then... most important to me personally, and really a lot of logistics for our planning committee, but it's all good. On the 6th, we're having family members come out. And what's our total number now on participants?
I think we're around 30.
30. So we're expecting some more, but just for family members of these men, we're going to go out there with wreaths that we're actually going to make. Forgot to mention this.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to make the night before in the Waukee Mall.
Oh, cool.
At Birds and Beasley's. And we're going to make these wreaths out of natural material found in the area of Mann Gulch. But we're going to have the family members go up there. Some are already training for this, but they're going to go across the river, and we're going to hike all the 13 wreaths up there and then place them on each one of the monuments.
Oh, very cool.
We've had a couple that said they want to do the hike, but then afterwards we're going to have a big picnic at the Meriwether campground, or a picnic site, and we have 30 that are going to be involved there. And we have an individual that works on the forest. She's amazing. Her and her crew, they work in recreation up in Shodo. Her name's Barb Long. I actually saw her yesterday. She's awesome.
Yeah.
And she's going to be cooking for all of us. And
very cool.
She's amazing. So we're really excited to be able to give those family members of Montana welcome.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell them, we care about you.
Yeah, and, not forgotten, right?
You are not forgotten.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to be the most important to me, is to make sure that those family members feel touched and moved by what we're doing and feel honored.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and that's, part of me wanting to come talk to you guys and kind of spread the word about all this, is that, the not forgotten thing, even though it's, 49, long time ago, it's still, alive and well in all of our thoughts and planning for fires, too, nowadays. Like you guys mentioned the fire lab earlier, the lessons learned and how the fire lab came out of there and how we're still, taking those hard lessons, from a tragedy and applying them today,
Mm-hmm.
Man. Yeah, it's going to be a great event. Great, what a great way to remember, that the tragedy of Mann Gulch and how those folks can live on,
One project we still haven't spoken about is the...
Oh, that's not coming. I was like, no.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
The wind's coming up.
The NWCG... group has worked for several years now on a project to both scan all of the artifacts that were found being, in Mann Gulch.
Yeah.
Any watches or things like that. Create three-dimensional scans, create a kind of the whole storyline of the fire told by David Turner, who's this, you know, if I were to name one person who knows this fire better than anyone, it's David Turner. He's been doing this, you know, almost 25 years pro bono since he retired from the Forest Service.
Oh, wow.
He planned the 1999 event. He was the lead, still super engaged with all of our planning efforts, and helped NWCG recreate the story of the fire. And they were able to, you know, put together scientists to kind of show how the blow up occurred and just kind of do some modeling. And wow. So all of those products are going to be available to the public this summer as well. And then hopefully you'll, you know, be able to kind of do a virtual tour of the area, because it is a really, if those, you know, people want to visit in person, they should come prepared for very exposed terrain, steep terrain, rattlesnakes. Yeah. So it's not very accessible to the general public. And so this was an effort. All of our events are in Helena to try to engage people locally, but then this is another way people can kind of engage without having to do that.
Yeah, and especially a virtual recreation, because like we mentioned earlier, you get on the hillside and you kind of picture it, especially after doing all the research and reading, you know, the Young Men and Fire book and whatever else you might have read or heard about and seen the map, but you don't really, you know, like you can kind of guess what it might look like, but a virtual thing would be as close as it gets to the real thing to be able to see like how big the flame lengths were and the time frame. Like we were talking like 5 o'clock or so, they left a jump spot, you know, was it 5:56? The watch stops right about then. I mean, and even Norm MacLean talks about how like all these little things of like all these events that slowed them down, that, you know, when time really mattered, even though they didn't know it at the time, you know, until they were running for their lives. But as you know, as I mentioned earlier about like my story with Mount Gulch, I've been there twice now, and to kind of tag on what you guys were saying about how rough the country is, the first time was in the early 90s. My dad had read the book, and, you know, I didn't know anything about fire, I didn't know anything about smoke jumpers. I was a young kid, and we were up visiting my grandparents here just north of there, kind of by Craig, Montana. And my dad gets wild hair, going to take us all his kids out there, and my stepmom. And so with my older brother, who I'm guessing he was 9, I'm guessing I was 7, and my little brother was 5, I think. And we had like 2 of those old school canteens for water, and I don't think my dad could have picked a hotter day. It was like the end of July, like blue skies, like, and we got like a later start. I wouldn't say we were probably up there till like 10 or 11 before, like at Log Gulch, we hiked in.
Oh, you went from that way.
Yeah, yeah, and how many miles is that? I mean, that's a good hump.
3? 4?
From Big Log Gulch?
Yeah.
No, oh, it's way further.
No, where we came in. You're thinking Willow Creek, because you drove all the way up to that.
Oh, wait, it was Willow Creek then.
Yeah, you drove all the way to the road.
Big Log Gulch would be a very long way to come from, at least 10 miles.
I'm guessing you drove all the way up to the...
Oh, maybe. Can you go, like, past the, like, put in there and keep going?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
You did, probably, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing I did, yeah. It's a long time ago. Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. So, yeah, 8 miles round trip then, right? Or is that 4 miles round trip?
It's 8.
8, whew, man. I don't know how my little brother made it being 5 years old, man. But, so, we hiked in, you know, it's probably, like, I don't know, 93, I think, 92 or 93, 1992 or 93, And like I said, you know, it could have been a hotter day. Like, we were about to give up, and my dad was like, he had the book, I think, with him, and he's like, I swear we're in, like, Rescue Gulch. Like, he's like, this looks familiar, it feels familiar. So, as you guys know, there's not many trees up there, not much shade. So he puts my stepmom and my 2 brothers and I under this tree to shade up for a little bit, and, like, we're all thinking, like, you know, he's crazy. Like, man, like, he's just taking us on a wild goose chase. And so he goes running up the hill and sees, like, the last marker, you know, like, the highest marker. And it was, you know, at the time, you know, that time of year, the grass is cured out and pretty high, you know, just from, you know, the summer growth. And so he sees one kind of barely sticking up out of the grass, and then comes and gets us. And so we go and check it out, and then we hike down to, you know, Wag. Because isn't there a marker right by where Wag Dodge started? His fire is there? Or?
There was. We're looking at putting another board there. Yeah. But at this point, there's nothing prominent marking it.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, because I want to say it was like, or maybe he was guessing, but I think it was like right in the area. And I think in Norm MacLean's book, didn't he have like an estimated time of like how fast you'd have to be going, or like what kind of time period you had from that light, right?
Yeah, it's incredibly fast.
Yeah, like in
20 miles an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, they've tried to recreate it over the years, and it's just like unthinkable.
Yeah, it's crazy that like it was Rumsey and Sally that outran it, right? It's like, it's crazy that they even made it, you know? And like, so my dad's like, all right, boys, let's time you. And like, there's no way, of course, I would have been gone, or, you know, at 7 years old. So then I think that's kind of what got me on the path of being a smoke jumper. Is, you know, I'm 7 years old, and we kind of talked about it before the podcast, like, super hot, that air just gets funneled in that gulch, and even on, like, a non-stormy day, a bluebird day, it was still, like, coming a pretty good breeze up that gulch, you know, and hot air on my face as I'm looking down into it as a little kid. So, like, I'm already, like, I can kind of feel the heaviness of that area. And I'm, you know, like we were talking earlier, like, when you're little, you don't really know, like, death and all that stuff, you know? You just see the markers and stuff. You kind of feel it, the area, because there's still, like, some dead snags, even though it was, like, you know, 40 years later or so, right? Or more than that, right?
It was still before the Meriwether fire, right? Yeah. That Meriwether fire almost reset the area.
Oh, really?
In 2007. Yeah. It was another really hot fire. Though they say that the monuments, you know, there's so many people that have visited them and, you know, just kind of created this fire protection around them because all the grasses and stuff were kind of beat down immediately around the markers.
Oh, good. Yeah, I didn't even know, man.
Yeah, 2007 was a really big fire and, you know, has created all kinds of issues since that are finally now resolved. But, yeah, it kept creating landslides, like, for years after.
Yes. So where
were all the vegetation? Hey?
Not to get us too far off your story.
No, go ahead. No, this is interesting.
So it created all of this material kind of funneled in where we're having the picnic, which is the Meriwether picnic site.
Oh,
and
no.
All of this material kind of let loose in like 08.
Oh, no.
And it just covered the whole picnic site. And so after that, we've been planning. That was a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
Planning on trying to rebuild that area and fix it up and make it nice, because, you know, the water system didn't work. The drinking fountain, it was ground level. You know, your dog could drink out of it
because all the material that came down.
Yeah, all the material that came down and just kind of wrecked that whole site. And so we actually ended up getting about $1 million in funding, put in a great proposal, and we got the contract and got everything going using partners and volunteers and our own staff is what really made that project work. But we rebuilt the Meriwether picnic site and it looks phenomenal. So when you get up there for the event where we're having the picnic on the 6th, it's going to look really nice for family members. And
I can't wait to see it, because the last time I was in the area, I think it, you know, somewhere in that time frame where it had been buried, you know, by material. And I remember, like, and I didn't know about the Meriwether fires, because I got in fire in 08, so I wasn't really tracking wildfires that much back in 07. And I was like, huh, it's kind of weird, you know, it must have been some kind of, like, slide, like you guys were saying, but I had no idea, like, what from, you know?
Yeah, and we didn't do anything with the material. We left that material, and we actually were going to put together, like, an interpretive panel and some signs there that show what happened, and but we used that material and just built right on the top of it, our own trails, and... it looks really good.
Smart,
you gotta go check it out. And I know that you're tied into Holter.
Yeah.
You need to get over there.
Yeah, definitely. I've been meaning to go bug my uncle. He pretty much lives out there. Well, he does live out there all summer. And I mean, he'll be out there till like he can't. Like last time I helped him get his docs, I was after Thanksgiving. I mean, he just holds up. But yeah, so I guess, you know, we timed it. My dad, you know, timed us as a kid. You know, it was back in the 90s. And wait, did you have anything else to say?
No,
I don't want to cut you off.
Go for it.
Yeah, do you guys have more on the Meriwether or anything?
Just shout out to Montana Conservation Corps for helping get day use area ready last year. Looks really good.
We had a great agreement with Montana Conservation Corps. We had a bunch of different folks within the office that just stepped up and they were like, we came up with a really cool plan on how to get that work done out there. And it took a lot of sweat equity to do that. But the other cool thing is we were way under what we thought that was going to cost us too, which we saved a lot of money. We were able to use that elsewhere, and it was just a win-win. It was really win-win.
Well, that's super smart not to remove the material, because I think, like, at least that's where my brain went. I think a lot of people would be like, oh, so we got to get some kind of like excavator up there to try to get all that material out, and like some kind of barge or something to move it, you know? We'll just leave it, you know, and, you know, work around it. I mean, that's a way better plan. And then you have something for people to see in, like, a, like you said, interpretive site for people to be like, oh, all right, that's what it used to look like, and here's what it is now.
And we excavated around the pavilion there, and that pavilion was made, built in, I believe, in the 60s, 64 or something.
Oh, wow.
And so it was we wanted to preserve that building and preserve it. We did. And it looks really, really good. And, we excavated around that, you know, but Yeah, that project turned out really well.
Man, that's cool. Yeah, I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, you need to check it out.
Yeah, MCC, man, they do great work. And the YCC and all those folks, like, that's some stuff, too, that I didn't really know about. And I think their message is getting out a little bit more, like, that you can have this group that you can even join as a high school kid, right? It's for YCC, for Youth Conservation Corps, right? And
Anyone from the age of 15 to 18.
Yeah, very cool. Like, what a great, like, summer gig to go out in the woods and hang out with some, you know, folks and get to learn about the outdoors and...
Absolutely. We have some YCC folks this year, and then we're our partnership with Montana Conservation Corps couldn't be stronger and mutually beneficial.
Yeah, it's a great one too, because I think for folks who, you know, like for me, it probably been great because then I didn't really know exactly what I want to do. I just figured, like, you know, everyone's like college route as a kid, and so I went that route, and you know, it was okay. I learned a lot and I got to, you know, run track in college at MSUB, but I think it would have been nice to go like YCC and MCC, because then you know, it might have kind of funneled me towards a different kind of profession. And you know, I had a good time in fire and I got to be a smoke jumper. I probably would end up there anyways, but it's cool because I think folks can get involved in the outdoors and get a little window into the Forest Service and these agencies where they can, you know, make a living out of being outside, you know, and contribute back to like their community, because like these trails that you guys are talking about that you guys have done with, you know, the middle school and all those other things. I mean, it's very cool to get a whole community effort to, you know, for the outdoors.
Yeah. And Kiara and I were both out visiting a Montana Conservation Corps group. We actually just started this year, and we called it the Helena Conservation Corps.
Oh, yeah.
And they're based out of Helena here, and they're mobilizing to each district on the forest, and they're doing work for us. And we went and checked on them yesterday and tied in with them, and it was just really cool to see all the hard work that they're doing out there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a never-ending battle, with especially the trails and some of that rehab stuff. I mean, the Selby Bitterroot Frank Church Foundation that we work with a lot, their volunteers in the Bitterroot, I mean, it seems like once you get done with all the trail systems, you just got to start the whole trek back over, because, you know, all the dead and down and everything else that happens, weather, whatever, you know, your road's the trail, and you know, it's just a constant battle. But it's great, rewarding work, because you're making this trail and this system better for folks to enjoy, you know.
Sure. Yeah, and the Youth Forest Monitoring Program will be out resealing the monuments next week. So it's another youth program for high school students. And then, of course, the Backcountry Horsemen are going to be out in the Gates of the Mountains Wilderness almost for an entire month doing trail clearing. Wild Montana's volunteering to help with that area. Helena Young Professionals. It's just a huge community effort, and so I just would be remiss if we didn't have a chance to just, you know, thank all of these different groups working with us, because it is so much greater than any one entity.
Yeah, totally. And I'm glad you mentioned them. And then for folks listening, you know, those groups are so inviting. So if you just like are interested, maybe you just want to talk to them, or maybe you want to get involved in some of these projects and help out, or, you know, get to hang out with a good group of folks. Like if you're into horses, you know, like you said, the Backcountry Horsemen is a great group. Or if you just want to, you know, help out with some trail stuff. I mean, there's all these volunteers that are like a lot of retired folks that, you know, are in the outdoors or just like want to be in the outdoors, and just a cool group and something to do, I think, you know, if you're looking to give back a little bit to your community and be in the outdoors. But the reason why I was telling my story, I guess, you know,
we're back to it.
Yeah. I'll try to be brief, so I don't want to keep you guys too long. So, you know, definitely didn't make it as a 7-year-old in that run. So like we make it back to my grandma's, we're all like dead, you know, super hot out that day, you know? And like I said, like I kind of surprised I became a smoke jumper because like of the heaviness of that place, you know, like looking back on it, you think it would like kind of deter me from fire, but then going into fire in 08 and then become a smoke jumper. So I rookie in 2013 at North Cascade Smoke Jumper Base in Washington. And at the time, my girlfriend, now wife, I was a college athlete. Like I mentioned earlier, ran college track. She was a college athlete, basketball and soccer. So we're both like really fit. We're in like running gear when we go to Mount Gulch again in 2013 in August. I wish I knew the day, but I think it was like the 10th. Yeah. So I don't think it was like the you know, the 5th, because I've been kind of wild if it was. But I wish I could remember the time of what Norm McLean had estimated the time you would have had to be able to run to survive. Because I remember timing us, and I think we would have made it, but just barely. But that's like in running shoes, shorts, like a tank top. Not jeans and logging boots, you know, like they're talking about wearing these heavy whites. Like, I mean, for those, and like we're talking about the steep country and, you know, like how gnarly that grade is. And
steep.
Yeah. And for Rumsey and Sally, right, were the survivors, to be able to outrun that fire. I mean, that is just like a superhuman feat, I would say, you know. And for anyone who would like to know more about what I'm talking about, it's a boat ride up there. It's pretty easy to go out and check it out and check it, you know, try to find the time. I know it's in his book, you know, and go give it a whirl. You know, and man, I was in the best shape of my life, and I was like, I don't know if I would have made it, you know?
Yeah, and factor in, you know, it was 97 degrees in Helena, potentially hotter there with a fire, you know, creating all this smoke around you.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even clear necessarily where to go for safety because it looked like a solid rock ridgeline, and, you know, Sally and Rumsey just happened to find a path through the rocks at the top.
Yeah.
And so it's not even, you know, I think there were others that just couldn't even see a channel out.
That would make sense, yeah, because like in his book, he talks about the four horsemen who were just like, you know, really going fast and got ahead of everybody. And then I think he mentioned in the book, like you said, they just happened to find like a little crevice that they, you know, opening in the rock. Because they were also battling smoke, right? So they couldn't really see, I think, right?
I would imagine it was, a little chaotic.
Yeah, they were smoked out.
Probably couldn't see where to go.
Yeah.
Where it looked
where
like
safety is.
Yeah. Man, yeah, it was all around them, and that big flame length, especially if it's accurate, that was 200 feet of flame length. Like, holy cow. But, well, so, yeah, that was the story that I had, and I really appreciate you guys taking time and sharing this. I mean, this is a great event, and man, I mean, it's wild, because, like, the last time I talked to you, I was, like, I mean, bigger than I expected, and then coming and talking to you guys today, and all the other things that have come along, just, what, it's been maybe a month since I called you?
But that could be, it's a number of projects that are just, you know,
happening.
Flourishing.
It's happening.
It's so cool. It's
we
so,
can't forget to talk about this coin.
Thank God. That's why I wanted to leave it out.
I'm about ready to forget about it.
Yeah.
So, the Montana Discovery Foundation is still raising funds for the event. We haven't stopped raising funds. We're still seeking funding for doing everything and trying to do everything. Well, and we had... iFly Big Sky was the company that sponsored this coin. I don't know if your viewers can see it.
You can kind of flash it, yeah.
But it's got this smoke jumper. It's actually this smoke jumper with the date Man Gulch. It's going to be on the medallions as well that are on all the grave sites across the country. And then the poster is the back of the coin itself. But we had a... Kevin Danz, who owns iFly Big Sky, he's an awesome individual. That's just, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he actually purchased all these coins already, and so he's, you know, we're looking at just, we're selling these out of the office, and Montana Discovery Foundation is selling those coins out of the office for $20, and they're going to be in like a week and a half or something, so be on the lookout for buying a coin. All the proceeds will go to the event. But yeah, it's cool that he made this commemorative coin and put a lot of his energy and time into really thinking about that. So
yeah,
shout out to you, Kevin Danz.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin Danz. And yeah, like all those things that, like, you know, like the posters and stuff that you can have that to take with you to, you know, because I'm a visual person for me. So like anything that, you know, like a t-shirt from fire or whatever, you know, like that I can like, that'll jog my memory to something, you know, like it. So, like, to have something you can, that's a good cause, you know, that you're donating back, but also you get to take something with you, like a coin. We talked about one of the wildland firefighter banquets on the Flathead wildland firefighter banquet. They're giving coins to folks who were, I think, everyone who bought a ticket, or maybe if you bought a raffle ticket, I can't remember how the coins work, but it's kind of cool to be able to, like, you know, have that piece of the event to take with you home, you know? So something like this, I think, is a really good idea.
It really turned out good. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Montana Discovery Foundation ultimately is where we want to turn people for more information if they're interested in learning more. They're selling David Turner's new book. They'll be selling posters, these coins, all kinds of things, and they are the primary partner for all the funds raised. They help fund the NSA Medallion Project. They've funded, you know, applied for Visit Helena grants that funded all the advertising down Last Chance Gulch in Helena. And so, yeah, they've been a fabulous partner, you know, who is championing this effort, because we, as obviously federal employees, can't raise monies and can't, you know, do half the things that are happening, but with partners we can. And so it's just really been awesome to see them kind of take on that role. And so they have the whole schedule of events on their website. They have all the partners recognized, all the corporate sponsors, and then any product or event happening, you'll probably find it on their landing page. So
yeah, beyond even just this, right? Like, there's other events going on, and is it mostly Helena area with them, or
they're also kind of sharing the schedule of all the memorials across the country. So that schedule is on their website as well. So yes, that's where we'll refer people to. You know, if you're interested in learning more, I think they're going to start selling these with the help of Wild Montana to ship them wherever they need to go in the country.
Oh, very cool.
But I think mid-July was their plan, or early mid-July is when you'll start to be able to, you know, buy things if you're interested, or, you know, but all the schedule of information is there now.
Oh, yeah, very cool. And so limited run on these, and limited run on the posters, too, for folks who are interested.
Yeah, so when they do come out, get on it.
Yeah, jump on. Yeah, for sure. I'll keep my eye on that coin when it comes out. Oh, man. Well, I appreciate it all. Is there anything else you guys want to cover before I let you guys go?
Thanks so much,
Thanks
Luke.
For having us.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you in August. Yeah.
I appreciate that. When this showed up today at the office, I said, all right, this could get interesting.
Yeah, it looks a little better from the outside, I think. But
all right. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you guys. Us. I appreciate it. Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be some more stuff down the road we'll meet up and talk about, because there's just constantly stuff going on that's very cool. And this just happened to be one of the events that, you know, kind of bridged this, you know, relationships between like me and you guys. So I'm sure there'll be some more stuff we'll cover down the road, but I appreciate you guys taking the time to come on.
Yeah, we'll have to exchange contact information, and
that's what I was gonna say,
so when you get into town we can hook up.
Absolutely. I'd love to bug you guys some more. Thanks for everybody who's tuning in and listening, and I'll try to put all the websites in the description of this video on YouTube. Was it Discovery Montana and all the other partners?
Discovery Foundation.
Oh, Montana Discovery Foundation. Perfect.
Yeah, they are the champions for driving a lot of this. So I couldn't thank them enough for everything. Yeah. It's a different lane for them than, you know, conservation education, and so they've stepped up in a big way.
Huge, yeah, and like you were saying, it's, you know, Kiara, like we can only do so much as agency employees. So having the partner step up to fill those gaps is huge, and then it makes one nice relationship and events like this that are incredible. So, and if everyone, you know, if you can pencil this in your calendar, you know, like this podcast will be out in a couple of weeks, so beginning of August, you know, pencil it in and just come down to Helena if you don't live here and check it out. If you do live here, it's easy for you to make the event. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in.